You're listening to The Big Show with George Russick and Matty Rose on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Hour number two, Big Show, Russick and Rose, Sportsnet 960, The Fan, powered by MortgagesToGo.ca. Always the lowest interest rates in Canada since 2004. Visit MortgagesToGo.ca. Hey, it's Eclipse Day. More Eclipse facts coming up. Oilers fans, man. We'll do that at the bottom of the hour. And Brent Cron, Big Show Flames analyst at 8 o'clock. But right now, he is the voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet, getting ready for the home opener today. You can watch on Sportsnet. Do we have it on Sportsnet 960? Yeah, and listen to it on Sportsnet 960 on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. I'm saying good morning to Dan Schulman. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for jumping on. You also do a great job of calling college basketball down south. Done it for years. Wanted to ask you about Zach Edey real quick. Do you think he potentially could have a hand in what Canada does at the Olympics here this summer? Because we know size is an issue with this team, right. But do you think he potentially could be a guy that we might have to rely on?
I don't know about rely on. I think he could be on the team. The issue is, and this is way beyond my area, but he's going to get drafted. And will the NBA team that drafts him want him spending 6 weeks away from them playing internationally? I don't know the answer to that. But I think, you know, he was on the World Cup team, and he was kind of the 12th man. He was basically the 12th man. But, you know, every now and again, you're going to run into a country that's got a 7'2" guy, and it helps to have a 7'4" guy. So Zach Edey is more mobile than he was a year ago. A year ago in the World Cup, it was tough for him defensively. You know, teams try to pull him away from the basket, put him in ball screens and drive around him, you know, make him uncomfortable. He's improved his mobility, but he's still a 7'4" guy, right? So he's only going to be so mobile. But I would guess if whatever team drafts him is cool with it, that yes, he would be kind of the, you know, the third center or, you know, an option that could play a few minutes here and there at the Olympics.
Obviously, we'll get to the Blue Jays in one sec. I just want to ask you another question about this. If the team is healthy here, they have a legitimate shot at a medal here, right? I don't think there's any question about that.
I think they have a shot at a medal. It's really tough. I mean, so who won it? Germany won it, right? Germany won the World Cup, so right. You know they're great. I think Serbia finished second without Jokic, so they're great. The USA is going to have a way better team than they had. Way, way, way better team than they had at the World Cup. France is going to add Wemby, so they're great. If Spain wins the qualifying tournament they're playing in, which is in Spain, they're Spain, you know, and Canada beat them, and they may not be as good as Spain was a few years ago. But I would say Canada has a shot. Has a shot at a medal. We still don't know if Jamal Murray is going to play. And, you know, you pointed out, and rightly so, if there's an issue for Canada, it's not enough size. So let's say Kelly Olynyk and Dwight Powell are there because they're always there. So they're going to be there. And let's say Zach Edey is there, too. But are they going to get a Trey Lyles or a Brandon Clark, somebody else with some size? And even if they do, again, you look around at what, you know, Serbia and France and the U.S., so what they can do in the front court, too. It's going to be tough. It would be awesome. Like, I would love nothing more than for Canada to be playing in a semifinal, and then, you know, at worst, they're playing for bronze. But it's going to be very, very difficult. You know, they can do it, but you know, so can just about anybody else who's playing in the Olympics. You know, nobody flukes their way into the Olympics.
Yeah, a backcourt of Jamal Murray and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. That sounds pretty good to me, Dan.
Yeah, and you put Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Lou Dort and I think Andrew Nembhard might be on the team. Like, there's no shortage of great guards. If this were like a 6'5 and under tournament, Canada could play for gold, I think. You know, they'd be great. But, you know, it's amazing they qualified, right? I mean, they, and my memory is not great at all, the order of the games they won in the World Cup. But, you know, after they lost to Brazil, their backs were against the wall, right? And they it's amazing they did what they did. It really is. And I think we shouldn't overlook that accomplishment of what qualifying for the Olympics means for the program and the country and basketball fans around the country. There are 12 countries in the Olympics. Oh, I didn't even mention Australia, right? And Australia is in Canada's group. So Canada is in with Australia, whoever wins the qualifying tournament in Spain, so let's say it's Spain, and whoever wins the qualifying tournament in Greece, which is going to be Greece or Slovenia, probably.
Oh, so take Luka your, or take Giannis. Yeah, great.
Right. Okay. Yeah, if Giannis plays. Right. Yeah. So let's say it's Slovenia. So Canada, Australia, Spain, Slovenia. Like, holy cow, right? That's the preliminary round, you know. So a little bit of a bad break in that. I think South Sudan is the team that is the country that came from Africa. Canada's not with them, but you know what? Canada's not with Serbia either. And that I don't think they could be with the United States. I think geographically they had to be away from the United States. But you know, so at the very least, they're going to have to win one, maybe two of those first round games just to get to the quarterfinals. So. It's going to be riveting stuff, like from the opening tip of the opening game. It's going to be riveting stuff. And I don't want to shortchange our women's team either. They're there too, right? And they're, you know, they have a shot at a medal too. I mean, if they play their best, they could certainly be playing for a medal. But we saw 3 years ago in Tokyo, they didn't get out of the first round. I think they lost on like points tiebreakers or something like that. But, you know, they put themselves in that situation where they didn't, just play their way into the quarterfinals. So it's going to be challenging stuff, but great theater on both sides.
Yeah, and I don't think it's hyperbole. They're saying this is the deepest men's Olympic tournament ever, which should be a lot of fun to watch this summer in Paris. All right, Dan, Blue Jays 4-6 on a very, very tough road trip to kick off the season. Wanted to ask you, how does the 2024 team feel different than the 2023 team?
Well, that's a good question. We're only 10 games in. I mean, for one, they've got more injuries right now. So, it doesn't really feel that different. You know, last year's team felt frustrating offensively. Like you knew there was more in there, and how come the whole didn't equal the sum of the parts? How come they could be sixth in this, eighth in this, 10th in that, and only 16th in runs scored or whatever it is? This year, they need all the guys on this roster to hit as well as they're capable of hitting to be a good offensive team. I don't see a ton of thump on this team. I hoped, and it's only 10 games, and you can't say that enough, but I hoped coming out of spring, like Dalton Barshow had a great spring. Alejandro Kirk had a great spring. That has not carried over into the season. And they need guys like Barshow and Kirk and others to hit to roll the lineup over and have some men on base for the top of the order. I think Bo's going to be Bo. Springer looks like he's off to a good start. Justin Turner is terrific. Vladdy, your guess is as good as mine. Like we know what the floor is for Vladdy. We'd like to see him a little bit closer to the ceiling, but we don't know if that'll happen. But the bottom part of the order has got to contribute. And does that mean that Davis Schneider just steals at bats from guys and becomes a regular and ends up hitting 28 home runs this year? No idea. Like, he's not a regular now. He's playing, you know, 2-3 times a week now, depending on matchups. Maybe he'll force their hand and do more. Is Ernie Clement going to be a 300 hitter and force their hand and play more? Don't know, right? So some guys have to step up on this team. I think the pitching will be fine. It's not up to a great start. I think it'll be fine, and you know, Swanson is coming, and Romano is coming, and I think Yariel Rodriguez is coming at some point too. And I think they've got some depth and some options on the pitching side, but they've got a hit. It didn't feel like a 4-6 road trip. It felt more like a 3-7 or 2-8 road trip. And they played three good teams, right? And you know, so it's not 4-6 isn't horrible, but it didn't look great. There were a lot of moments where it was like, you know, wow, they're down 8-0, they're down 10-0, or they're just not hitting. So I think in some ways they're fortunate to come home 4-6. Not going to be easy this week. Seattle's got three great pitchers coming in. So, but you know, to answer your question, I hope this team can hit better than last year's team did, but that's going to require a lot of guys on this roster having good seasons. So hopefully that'll happen.
Dan, what did you make of the deployment for 39-year-old Justin Turner on this 10-game road trip? And what do you expect it to be like for the rest of the season, as he's already proved to be a very important piece?
Yeah, so, and this is another issue for the team that doesn't get talked about very much at all, is that in Justin Turner, George Springer, and Kevin Kiermaier, to borrow a basketball term, there's a bit of load management going on for all three. Mm-hmm. So I think Turner started 8, and I don't remember if he – I think he came off the bench in one of the other two. Part of the reason Turner didn't play yesterday is they wanted to give George Springer a DH day. So if Springer DHs, and let's assume Vladdy's at first, then Turner's either at third base or he's not in the lineup. And this is the way it's going to be. So, you know, best case scenario, Turner, you know, maybe Turner plays 135 games and Springer plays 135 games and Kiermaier plays 125 games or something like that. But that's the way it's going to be. You know, I think Vladdy and Bo are obviously guys who can play 160. They've shown that in the past. But I think the first domino yesterday was they wanted to get Springer a DH day. And therefore, something had to, you know, Turner either had to play third, where he had played the night before, or he was going to sit out. And they don't play in the lineups one day in advance, as you guys know. I mean, they're flexible, but they kind of they look further than one day out when they're thinking about things. So it was Springer DHing that led to Turner not being – that was part of the reason Turner was not in the lineup yesterday.
Saw some good and saw some bad from the rotation. Do you have concern over the two starts we've seen from either Chris Bassitt or Kevin Gausman?
Bassitt, I don't think so. I think he's going to be fine. Gausman, the first one was great, so no concern there. The second one was not, obviously. And if you let, can we table this question until after the third one?
Yes.
You know, if the third one is great, then I don't have any concerns mm-hmm. over the second one. So he does have the occasional velocity blip. This was a big blip, but it was a really cold night, and historically, and I was not as aware of this beforehand as I should have been, this has happened to him before in cold weather games. So his next two are at the Dome, and then the one after that I think is in San Diego, and then it's the weather's getting warmer, and let's hope he's Kevin Gausman. So I don't think so. You know, Bowden Francis in the fifth spot, Houston and the Yankees, not the easiest way, you know, for a guy who's never made a major league start, go to Houston, go to New York, two good hitters parks and two good hitting lineups. I still think that Bowden Francis can be a capable major league starter. I think he'll get another opportunity. So I think the rotation is going to get better. To expect it to be as good as it was last year is asking a lot, just because it was great last year. Four-fifths of the rotation was fantastic and very healthy and all that. So, but if this team is going to win 90 games and make the playoffs, the rotation, I think, is going to have to lead the way. So, you know, let's hope they're all okay, but it's too soon for me to really sound the alarm on any of them, to be honest with you.
Dan Schulman's the voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet, joining us here on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Big Show, Russick and Rose, 960 The Fan. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Is a very polarizing figure right now on the Toronto Blue Jays. Dan, do we forget he's just 25? Is there still a ceiling for Vlad Jr.? Is that 2021 year where they're playing in Buffalo and in Dunedin an outlier? Like, what's your read on Vlad Jr.? Because we see just the raw ability, the Statcast numbers, where he's one of the hardest hitters of the baseball on the planet. But we just want to see more from this guy. Or is this who he is? He's going to be a 30 home run, 100 RBI, very good baseball player, but maybe not that superstar the Blue Jays thought they were getting all along.
Yeah, I mean, there's more of that than there is of 2021, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, 2021 looks like an outlier. And in 2019, we all thought he would have a string of 2021s. And it hasn't turned out that way. This is his sixth major league season, his fifth full major league season. So, you know, Juan Soto's just a couple of months older than Vladdy. Ronald Acuna Jr., Julio Rodriguez is younger, but and maybe he'll develop into this kind of a player as well. I hope it's in there. I mean, he is polarizing. We talk about him endlessly, and we've seen his best, and it makes you just want to see that over and over and over again, but it hasn't been there consistently. Like last year, I think he hit 26 homers and drove in 94, if I'm not mistaken. A lot of guys would kill for those numbers, but yeah. We know that's just scratching the surface for him. I thought he looked good in the spring, you know, like better than okay, but not like fantastic. And I thought he looked really good in the Tampa series, and then it all just evaporated in Houston, like chasing and being fooled by changeups and things like that. And to be honest with you, I kind of feel for him a little bit, because He's had incredible expectations on him since he was a teenager because of his name and his ability. Like, it's one thing to have the ability. It's another thing to have the name that you have too. So, and you know, I don't go up to Vladdy and say, "Hey, Vladdy, how much is this weighing on you emotionally?" I don't think that's my place. So, but I would imagine that he feels the weight of expectation for this franchise and has for a few years. So, I hope he has an incredible season, an MVP caliber season. We know the talent is in there, but I don't think I could go out there and say, "Yeah, I expect it," because there's only been one of those, and there have been, you know, leaving his rookie half season out of it, there have been three seasons that have not been at that level. They've been good, but they have not been at that level. You know, again, too soon to tell. Scorched a double to left center, hit a home run to the opposite field in the last 2 days, so some good signs there. But until you see several weeks in a row of it, like we've seen in his hot streaks in the past, I think it's hard to really say with confidence that you expect an MVP caliber season.
Do you think the Blue Jays are going to commit to him long term?
I don't know how you value him. I think he's an incredibly difficult player to value because, again, at his best, he gets an enormous contract. But if you based it on last year, that's a smaller contract. So I don't know how the two sides would ever come together unless he does go out and has a monster season this year and the vibes are good and everybody loves each other. And then in August, they announce an extension. But I don't think there's a huge chance of them announcing an extension. My guess is, and honestly has always been, that unless they're traded at some point, that both Bichette and Guerrero wind up going to free agency. I may be totally wrong.
Wow.
If I had to pick one that there's a better chance of them signing, I would say Vladdy, but I only think it happens if, you know, unless it, like his strong desire is to play his whole career in this city or something like that. But barring that, I think the only way it happens is if he has a great year this year and the two sides, you know, everybody's happy and let's get it done.
Dan, how the hell did we get to this spot? Like, the Blue Jays were supposed to be this young, exciting team with Bo and Vlad, the linchpins of the franchise, and this team was supposed to contend for World Series championships. But if I look in the division at the Orioles, the Blue Jays feel like miles behind the Orioles with their young, exciting talent. And correct me if I'm wrong, when they brought in Ross and Mark, they were supposed to stockpile this team with incredible prospects that they can use to grab major league talent. And they have made some good, shrewd moves. The Barrios trade was a great trade for the Blue Jays, but the cupboards were always supposed to be stocked with Ross and Mark here, and that's just not the case right now, Dan. What the hell happened?
Well, they're not a young team anymore. I mean, some of the young guys were traded away, obviously, to get veterans to try to put them over the top. You know, they were, in terms of the farm system, I think there have been some hits and some misses. Like, 3-4 years ago, we would have thought Nate Pearson would be a frontline starter by now. Alek Manoah was a frontline starter and is now not here. You know, he's now in the minors and got roughed up in A-ball. I mean, if you put Nate Pearson and Alek Manoah at the front of your rotation, you're not spending all that money on some of the other starters you have, and you're spending that money somewhere else. So, you know, some of it, I guess, is bad luck. Some of it is they haven't drafted and developed as well as they would have liked, as we would have liked. So I think there are a lot of different things going on, you know, and also Vladdy, and this is maybe fair or unfair, was supposed to be more than he is, right? So that's part of it. There was the Gurriel Moreno trade for Varsho because they wanted to get better defensively, wanted to balance the lineup, and they traded away two good players to get Varsho, who unfortunately for him, I mean, tremendous defender, tremendous base runner, but hasn't been able to swing the bat like they need him to and like he wants to and is capable of. So, you know, I think it's a lot of different areas. And you're right, they're not a young team anymore. They're not a cheap team anymore. They're top heavy with some big contracts for guys who are in their 30s because I think they saw, hey, this is the window and we're close and let's go for it. And it still could work out. But, to me, they don't have quite as much talent as they did a couple of years ago. And they're obviously older than they were a couple of years ago. I hope the farm system can produce guys for them going forward. But at this point, if you want to talk about the Vladdy Bo window, like we're late enough in the window where the farm system might not help this window. It might help the next, you know, the next stage beyond 2025. So it goes to show you how volatile all of this is. I remember when the Cubs won the World Series in 2016, people threw the word dynasty around like crazy and never got close again, right? So Baltimore will be interesting. Now, finishing last several years in a row gets you high draft picks. That helps. Houston did the same thing earlier, right? Like, terrible for 3-4 years in a row, high draft picks. That helps. But it'll be interesting to follow Baltimore. But you're right. They are younger and more athletic and have a lower payroll. And they're kind of where the Blue Jays felt like they were about 4 years ago. So, but as we've seen, there are no guarantees.
What has Don Mattingly's impact been, or Don Mattingly, excuse me, his impact been kind of with a new role? Have you felt like the approach has been different?
Yeah, I do. I feel like where the Blue Jays are struggling is not in terms of pitch selection or chasing. I think every baseball fan of every team thinks that their team chases more pitches outside of the strike zone than any other team in baseball. The Blue Jays last year, I believe, had the second lowest chase rate in baseball. And this year, I think it's third lowest. I think the messaging is more consistent. It's starting with Mattingly coming down from the top. And it is, don't swing at what you can't do damage with early in the count. When you get to two strikes, you got to battle, obviously. But early in the count, take a borderline pitch. Know what you're good at and know what you're not good at. And hope you focus on getting a pitch in the zone that you are good at. The messaging has been consistent. They're taking their walks. Like, look up walks, look up walk percentage, look up chase rate, all of those things. They're doing well there. What they're not doing is cashing in by doing damage with runners on base. They're fouling back 3-1 pitches they should hit, or they're leaving the bases loaded. You know, so it's a combination of the runners in scoring position thing and the just not doing damage. And are the hitters good enough, especially the bottom half of the lineup? Like, it's great to get the count in your favor, but if you're not a good enough hitter to turn that around and hit a double every now and again with a couple of men on base, then it's not really doing you any good if you're just swinging and missing or fouling off pitches that you're supposed to be able to hit. I think his presence is being felt. He's highly respected. And I think that, listen, they got four hitting coaches all giving them the same messaging. They all seem like they're in a good place. I think they feel pressure because of last year, because the narrative has been, they got to hit more, they got to hit more, they got to hit more. It's constant. And they know the numbers, they know what getting shut out and no hit and one hit means. So, yes, I think his presence is being felt, and hopefully we'll start seeing it. Process leads to results. Hopefully we'll start seeing it in the results soon.
Dan, I really appreciate your time. We've kept you way too long. I have to ask you one more quick question. When you're in the booth and Angel Hernandez is behind the plate, how is that fun for you? Is it frustrating? Like, how do you deal with it personally?
You just got to keep an eye on things because you never know when something could happen. And it happened in the first inning yesterday, a weird Bob Francis thing. And there were like three really weird things. So it's a little bit frustrating. I'll tell you this. I bumped into him on the street. This is years ago. I was with a broadcast partner of mine and we walked by him and he couldn't have been a nicer guy. We sat and talked for 15 minutes. Angel Hernandez, the person, is different than Angel Hernandez on the field. And obviously there are issues in terms of, I don't know if you guys saw the check swing call from like 4 or 5 days ago against Spencer Torkelson in Detroit. Yeah. Like it wasn't even close to a swing. Wasn't even close to being, wasn't even close. And he called it a swing. And it does make you a little bit crazy because it's a hard game for umpires, I think, but it seems a little bit harder for him than it is for most of the other guys doing the job. So yeah, it keeps you on your toes, because you never know what's going to happen. But I wish there weren't this many issues, whether it's for the Blue Jays or against, doesn't matter to me. Like you just want the game officiated, for lack of a better term, at the highest level and fairly. And I'm not saying he's not fair, but you never know who the bad call is going to go against, right? A call that could determine a game. So, tricky. Let's say it's tricky.
Yeah, absolutely. Dan Chauvin, yeah. The voice of the Blue Jays, the home opener tonight. Watch it on Sportsnet at 5:00. Your son Ben with the call on the radio side of things. Very exciting stuff. Dan, always a pleasure. Thanks for taking time out today.
All right, guys. Thanks. Have a good one.
There he is on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Terrific stuff from Dan Schoeman. Yeah, Angel Hernandez. Like, there's not, like, who's even the NHL equivalent of Angel Hernandez?
There isn't.
That's what I mean.
There isn't, because you wouldn't be allowed to work. The NHL wouldn't stand for someone botching calls like that.
And then, like, just, like, puffing up his chest when he botches the call, too.
Yeah. Like, yesterday, Dan's so on the nose. Like, I'm watching the game, and I'm unaware that it's Angel behind the plate. And then first inning thing happens, and I'm like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah.
How did they all miss this?
Yeah.
And, of course, I get a text from my little brother. Biggest Jays fan year or less. Angel back at it again.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Buckle up.
And that clip of the thing in Detroit, like, Torkelson didn't even come close to swinging. And he's like, why am I out? I didn't even swing.
Dude, the one yesterday with Torres is ridiculous. Like, the Jays got the benefit of it.
Yeah.
When he steps off the mound, and then they're like, no, yeah, that's a strike.
Yeah.
And then, excuse me?
And when Buck says stuff like, I've never seen that before. Yeah. You're like, Buck Martinez has never seen that before.
Player,
Buck.
Manager,
yeah.
Broadcaster, yeah. Never
like
seen it before.
Literally 60 years in the game. It's like, I've never seen that before. Something's up.
And also, the rest of his crew, how did you all miss that?
Yeah.
All of you. What are we doing here?
Crazy. It's crazy. He's just, he's...
Crazy.
Yeah. All right. We got lots to do coming up here. Oilers fans, straight ahead.
Great.
We got a Masters pool we want to tell you about. Intern Simon has that.
I'll do we have an air horn for the Oilers fans?
I don't know how do they smuggle that in.
I don't know. I have no idea.
And I got a couple of Eclipse facts I want to get to, too. And then Brent Cron at 8 o'clock.
Oh, Eclipse facts.
Yes. Excellent. It is the eclipse today. Mm. And I'll remind you for Albertans what to look for today, because it's more of a public service announcement. We should be doing that for our people, our listeners.
Yeah, the official ISO 12312-2 glasses. Those are the ones you want. That's trending on X right now. If you don't have those glasses, do not look at the sun.
Okay, that really rolls off the tongue,
yeah,
too.
ISO 12312-2.
Sure. those glasses and Eclipse facts
so
next.
So dumb.
Big Show, Russick and Rose, 960 so dumb, the fan. Dude. It's a Big Show, Russick and Rose, Sportsnet 960, The Fan, powered by MortgagesToGo.ca. Always the lowest interest rates in Canada since 2004. Visit MortgagesToGo.ca. At the top of the hour, Big Show Flames analyst, Mr. Brent Cron in studio. Break down the Flames 4-2 loss to the Edmonton Oilers down at the Dome on Saturday night. It is Eclipse Day. There is a solar eclipse that will be seen across North America. Albertans will experience a partial solar eclipse today as the moon and its path on Earth in the sun blocks out a chunk of the latter. If you're in Ontario, Quebec, New Brunswick, Newfoundland, and PEI, you'll get more of the totality of it. But in Alberta, in Calgary, it'll last for around 2 hours, beginning at 11:48 this morning and at 12:43 this afternoon. The moon will cover the largest portion of the sun around one-third's worth, so compare it to a bite out of a giant chocolate chip cookie. So what are the glasses you need to get?
Does it have to be chocolate chip?
It can be macadamia nut.
Okay.
It can be red velvet.
Mm-hmm.
It can be black and white.
Oh.
It can be oatmeal.
Oh, really? It can?
Raisin, oatmeal raisin.
Hmm.
I'm running out of cookies.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Reese's peanut butter.
Yeah.
Double chocolate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
S'mores.
Snickerdoodles.
Yeah, snickerdoodles. Mm. What are the glasses you need to buy if you want to look at it directly?
Pizzelli.
ISO 123-12-2.
Okay. That really rolls off the tongue.
Yes. ISO 123. That's really all you want to know. ISO 123.
Okay.
I'm just happy that someone made like a boatload of money selling fake glasses online.
And he's like,
and he's just
blinding.
He's just going to be laughing, chuckling all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
Well, people are just going to stare at the sun and be like, the glasses said it's fine. Like, this is incredibly painful.
I
but
just picture those
this
like
is fine.
Paper 3D glasses
yeah.
you used to get with the
yeah.
red and blue.
That's kind of what they look like.
Yeah, it is what they look like. They're cheap.
You know what it's time for, though? You know what we
What's
should
that?
Do?
What?
We should do a fact what? On the eclipse.
No,
today.
I don't.
We should do
I
it.
I don't know if we need to do this.
It's time for an eclipse fact on The Big Show with Russick and Rose on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
If you view a total solar eclipse safely with the appropriate eye protection.
What do you need, George?
Eye protection.
Yeah, what's it called?
ISO 1234. I don't know. What is
ISO 123.
Okay,
ISO 12-2.
You might notice a sliver of light around the moon's edge.
Uh-huh.
That appears beaded like a necklace.
Oh.
This phenomenon is known as Bailey's beads. Named for astronomer Francis Bailey, who described the effect in 1836. It caused by sunlight interacting with the moon's uneven topography.
Oh, okay.
Bailey's. That was an eclipse fact. On The Big Show with Russick and Rose on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
I struggled with that one.
Didn't mean to cut off our voice guy. Wow.
Yeah, I struggled with that one.
Yeah, astronomer.
Astronomer. That's a tough word for me.
I love astronomy.
Astronomer.
Astronomer.
I like.
I can't say. Don't. I can't say Habib's first name.
Space
or last
and
name.
Stars.
Nurmagomedov.
I can't do it.
That one's hard.
Nurmagomedov.
Nurmagomedov.
Mm. Nurmagomedov. Okay, I did it.
There, yeah.
Okay, but I can't do it unless you would have said it first. Like a parrot squawking.
Yeah.
All right, so more eclipse facts with Brent Cron coming up. Also, it's Masters Week.
Yeah, sure is.
It's exciting.
Buckle up.
It is Masters
Buckaroo.
Week. So we have intern Simon in. We have a contest.
Same one as last year?
Well, why don't we find out some details?
Oh, wow.
GVP Simon.
If you're not already excited for the excitement of the Masters at Augusta, who will seize the prestigious green?
Hold on. Can I just stop you right there?
Yes, you can.
Simon, you're going to where to school?
Sate.
And you want to get into sports broadcasting, right?
That is right.
Can I ask you an honest question?
Yes, you can.
You've never heard of Augusta National?
I'm not a huge golf person.
Okay, but in your life, how long have you been on this earth for?
19 years.
That's young. You've never heard of Augusta National, as in the home of the Masters?
I haven't, no.
Okay. It is Augusta.
Gotcha.
Okay, so why don't we start again?
Sure. Get ready for the excitement of the Masters at Augusta. Augusta? There you go. Who will seize the prestigious green jacket? You can win too by joining the Sportsnet 960 Masters Pool. It's free to enter. Just head to sportsnet.ca/960 contest page. Make your picks and you could snag an USCAN Designer Series safe from Calgary Lock and Safe, valued at over $550. Wow. On the golf course, mastering putting is key to victory. In business, mastering access control ensures success. Protect your business with a master key system from Calgary Lock and Safe.
There you go.
Great stuff,
Simon. That's well written. I like that.
Great stuff, Simon. You'll be reading that the next couple days. And it's Augusta National.
If I had a business, I would definitely be going Calgary
one of more.
Lock and Safe to keep my stuff secure.
Damn right.
Augusta's one of the most beautiful places on earth.
Bad allergy season.
You should go look at some pictures.
Really sniffly.
Like, you honestly never heard of Augusta National till just now.
Well, I hadn't heard it said out loud.
Nobody really. I get that. You know the Masters. And like, oh, where's it played? I bet you know. I bet you go pull somebody on the street. I bet they don't know where it's played.
No.
Yep.
No. You know what we're doing
right now?
You know what we're doing? Scooter Scoops tomorrow. We'll do it. We can go ask. We can just go ask people where are the Masters played.
That's great. If you wanted to jump on your scooter and do scooter scoops.
Yeah. Oh, I have to leave the show for a segment and get to scoot around town for work
with my little phone.
Oh,
it's
so hard.
You know where the Masters
tough
cool,
gig,
bye.
Rose. Tough gig.
Yeah. I just again like
we live in a sports bubble where it's crazy that you know like yeah.
Yeah, we live in our little echo chamber.
Again, and Simon, I'm not singling you out here, but from somebody who wants to get into sports broadcasting. Not knowing the simplest thing of where the Masters is played is a little alarming to me.
It's fine.
That's fine.
It's fine.
How many golfers do you know? Like, how many could you name off the top of your head right now?
Well, that feels like putting me on the spot.
No, it definitely is. It definitely is. It's a follow-up to what to earlier.
Okay, you know at least one.
But you got to know, I assume that you know, like, two, maybe three. That's my guess. How many can you name right now?
Ugh. Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy. Not off the top of my head.
See?
Putting me on the spot here.
Nailed it.
Two biggest.
Two, maybe three.
Okay.
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
I didn't care about golf that much when I started working here.
Top text. Did the guy who just said astronomers just give a kid grief about his pronunciation of Augusta?
Yeah.
There's a difference from misspeaking to knowing. There's a big difference.
Astromotors.
Alrighty, well, you learn a new thing every day.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Great job, Simon.
Bing, bong, bing.
Great job. Yeah, it's played at Augusta National. The azaleas, the Georgia pines.
No animals.
No animals, because they kill them all. Because they ruin the course.
I don't know if I could tell you where the other majors are being played this year.
It's a good question.
Where's the U.S. Open being
played? It is going to be played, not the tennis one. Pinehurst.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, we played Pinehurst down at the sim the other day.
Tough track.
The Open's at Royal
Troon. Ate the boys alive.
Royal Troon.
And the PGA is
Valhalla in Louisville.
Valhalla's fun.
Yeah, it's good. Pinehurst ate.
Yeah, it's a tough one. No, U.S. Open. The courses eat you alive.
Of course, they're supposed to.
Okay. It's so nasty.
I'm gonna ask you one more question, Simon.
Mm. Royal Troon. That's where the Open is this year, just so you know.
The most famous tennis tournament is played where in the world?
Augusta.
That's a great guess.
Hell
that
yeah.
is a great guess,
Hell
George.
Yeah.
Tennis.
That is
I
a
said.
Great guess. Hell yeah. Georgia, baby.
It's okay.
Wimbledon?
All right, Simon.
Wimbledon.
Yeah, it is Wimbledon. Have you heard of Wimbledon?
I have heard of Wimbledon.
Okay. All right. All right, Oilers fans. I got a text. George, you're an ass. Lay off the kid. Okay.
Got him break. He's 19.
Yeah, listen. I just think we've gone on a little bit too long with this, frankly.
Okay.
Let the kid be.
All right. Oilers fans, so...
Love me an Estomini sandwich.
Yeah. Extra mustard. Mm. So, Saturday night... Notice a lot of Oilers fans in the crowd. A lot of blue and orange in that crowd Saturday night down at the Dome. Ran into a couple obnoxious fans in the stands.
Crazy.
Because I had a friend from town. First time in Calgary. Diehard Flames fan. First
BOA.
The 80s. First BOA, first everything. Had experience that. So went for a beverage after. In my building, there's a lounge in my building. Very nice little lounge. And there were some Oilers fans there.
Mm.
And they were very rambunctious, very loud.
Mm.
And there was a point where I thought the Oilers fans were going to fight this individual in the Flames jersey.
Oh.
They got right up in his face.
Oh, really?
Like, this is neither the time nor the place to do any of this.
It's definitely not the place.
Yeah. So they had a few drinks. They were yelling, "Go Oilers, go," in the lounge. And then Calgary sucks, right?
Sick.
So they left, and then lying in bed, what do I hear at like 2:30 in the morning? Oilers fans yelling, "Go Oilers, go!"
Mm.
Calgary sucks for about 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I know why. Some Flames fans detest our friends to the north, and there's a lot of Oilers fans in this city. I understand all of that, but my interactions with them on Saturday night, I would say as a whole.
Mm.
Not positive.
Hmm. I thought it was going to be worse. Not going to lie. That's kind of standard from what I expected.
Now, here's the question I really wanted to get to.
Uh-huh.
Saturday night, there was a lot of energy in the building. What did the playoffs feel like here when they played a couple years ago?
What was that like? There was a lot of Oilers fans.
What was that like? Because I know there was a lot of nervousness on the Flames. You don't want to lose to them. But what was the energy and atmosphere like in the building?
The first game was incredible.
Yeah, 9-6.
The 9-6 barn burner.
Game two started really great.
Yeah, but you also, there's just like a sense of like, that's not, like, the 9-6 game, you're like, okay, they won it, but you're also like, that's not.
You're not feeling
this
good.
This is not
it was
how.
Unsettling.
Yeah, because you essentially played right into the Oilers game and somehow you got lucky and you beat them. And Jacob Markstrom looked not good after he had been, what, the second best goalie in the first round behind Jake Oettinger. And so there was a little nervous energy in the second game. And then, of course, by the time you come back for game five, you're on the ropes and you're not feeling overly confident. So, listen, the energy was great in the first game, but I just think that there was a little bit of a kind of nervousness that started to get in there. It's not like when you watch the Maple Leafs play at home and you can tell that the crowd is just waiting for something bad to happen, but it was still not the same.
Like, it was a 5-1 Flames lead. Oilers made it 6-6, and then the Flames scored the final three goals.
That's insane. It was not comfortable. The Oilers ran on a 5, no problem, and you were like, they could do that at any moment in this series, and then they did.
Yeah, because the Flames got out to a 2-0 lead, Tanev gets hurt, and then the Oilers just take it away.
Yeah, like, Redlot was barely set up. The whole damn thing crumbled around them, so, yeah. Yeah, it was solid, but
just being there Saturday, and I was sitting beside Ryan Leslie too, and I was like, I just couldn't imagine what it must have felt like here a couple of years ago during the playoffs.
Like, the atmosphere, like, around town and kind of like around the province was kind of hectic, and game days, you could feel it in
the air.
There's a certain amount of tension, but then, like I mentioned, I think it would have been more memorable if the series had been close, you know?
Yeah. And, of course, McDavid has to score the series clincher because that's what he does because he's such a freak. But, yeah, the didn't have too many positive interactions with Oilers fans on Saturday night. A little rambunctious. And I saw, at what age is it appropriate to wear one of those chains with the logo on it? Because this gentleman in the bar, he must have been in his 40s, had one of those chains on him. Like, really, dude?
Nice.
Like... At what age? Like, if you're a child and you are cool.
14's the cutoff, I think.
Thank you. That's what I was kind of getting at.
I like those chains when I thought the Flames were the only team doing them, and then I realized they were just another fad that every team...
Every team big four sport is doing.
Yeah, then I realized I'm out on the big gangster chains.
Yeah, with the logo.
The Flavor Flav style logo.
Gold plated, not real gold.
So I'm out.
You're saying 14? I think that's a good benchmark. Because this gentleman had one of those with his McDavid jersey, and he was getting up into the grill
pants.
Of a Flames fan. So not the most positive experience on Saturday night.
Another round at the old BOA.
Just not too many left in the old barn.
Nope.
Right?
What, 9? Maybe?
At
10?
Least 3 more seasons worth.
Yeah.
So, count down till the new rink.
At least 9, maximum 12? Yeah. Going to be good.
Or who knows, maybe a playoff date down the road in the old barn. Or maybe not. Or maybe in the new barn. That'll be fun. Brent Cron is here.
Kale McCarr's here?
Yeah. Yes.
Sure.
Brent Cron is here. We will speak to him next. It's The Big Show, Russick and Rose, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.